I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Girl, I have no intro. I only have you, but that's all I need. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. And I'm super excited because it's Friday and that means only one thing.
It is time. The UBB, which means everybody sent in all their various questions, thoughts, whatever they would like us to talk about. I'm Scott Tilford. I already said he was Jules Gill, the best of us sitting with me. So we'll get through as many questions as we can because we've got a whole lovely little roundup of stuff this week. And I'm going to bring some stuff across from last week as well because we had a whole bunch of things submitted from last week's question pool as well. So first question from Jacob Sawyer, who says, after 14-ish years, I finally beat Count Dooku on the Revenge of the Sith game on PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
Well done, my friend. Is there any boss that you held a long-standing I'm gonna get you type grudge, and of all those old tie-in games, which one would you like to see remade? Now, I have to say Jedi Power Battles because it's the only one. I don't know what else people want in life.
So Jedi Power Battles was the what was that one?
It was the PS1 one where you could play as like Plo Koon and Mace Windu and Qui-Gon.
Yes. Yeah,
and Obi-Wan.
Okay. That was a very, very good game. I was a huge fan of the Rogue Squadron series. I'd love to see them make a return. So if we got like a Rogue Squadron 4, that'd be fantastic. Mm-hmm. I remember being like so giddy, like to the point where I nearly like passed out from being overgasped because I went into game and they had the I think it was called Rebel Assault. Mm-hmm. And it was the version of the game on the GameCube that came with the first game as well. So you got you got two games for the price of one. And I was like,
I never
had co-op missions added in. I was like,
I never played this stuff. But I remember like when I was in, it would have been HMV, which I don't know I don't even know what HMV's global reach is, but it's a store in the UK that sells stuff. And they had it playing and it was on one of their like demo units. And it looked real. Like to me in 2001 or whatever it was, it looked real. I don't know if they used footage from the movies or whatever it was back then. But like I've never played those games. I've seen them be played. I know what they are, but I would love to like get access to that stuff.
I don't understand what it is, but Star Wars, like everyone nowadays is like, oh, it's been ruined. Battlefront 2, I don't like this game no more.
I
tell you what, go back to the back catalogue. Star Wars has got some absolute belters in there that just don't get talked about enough today. It's like we were talking about Bounty Hunter. Does not get the love that it deserves. Like, it's not a great game, but it's that perfect.
I love that
Scott Jules 6 out of 10, 10 out of 10 game. Love that game to pieces. There was the one where they decided to become Twisted Metal for a bit.
Do
you remember that? Do you remember that one?
And then I don't know what it was called, but I totally remember that.
And then they had another one which was like live action like cutscenes in the same sense of like the Mortal Kombat thing, but it was like a shooting gallery style thing. I think that was like Rebel, that might have been Rebel Assault actually, that one there.
Right, okay. I remember the Twisted Metal style one because everyone did car combat stuff back in the 2000s.
Everyone did.
It's like, Eric, come on in. And so like, that stuff's great. But for me, it's Jedi Power Battles just because I think that game had great combat. It's probably aged like milk, but I remember it being really cool back in the day. But in terms of a boss that you held a grudge against, my first one was Unalaska in Final Fantasy X. She's got like three phases and like young me, I mean, that game came out in like 2001 or something. So I was like 11 or 12, and I just remember just trying it over and over and over again and finally getting through the first phase, and she had another one, finally getting through that phase, and I just feel like you know, because you know, when you think back on your life and you're like, you're sort of like, oh, I was in school forever. And even though it was just like a year, like you were in that year of school for like 1 year, but it feels like way longer. Yeah. I felt like I fought UNALESCA for like a whole school term. Like it just feels like a whole thing. And I remember just eventually beating her on like a Saturday morning. I got up really early to get some hours in. And I just eventually beat her. And that was like one of the earliest, like, oh my God, it's finally done style things. But how about you?
To be honest, man, like you could pick any from the Final Fantasy series that I have a long-standing grudge at, because there's, when it got to like the sort of like hyper bosses, the raid bosses, the secret bosses, like any of the like weapons and stuff like that in Final Fantasy VII, I remember losing my cool way too many times to be appropriate, because it was like, I thought at the time that I was leveled up enough to take on these things. And like when you're a kid and it's in the emergence of the internet days, so you don't really have like a constant source of other people going through the same thing to share tips and tricks with. You only have that one kid at school that maybe luckily bought the guidebook, if you're lucky. Everyone else had like the PlayStation Power version, which kind of missed out a lot of the other stuff.
Like an exploder cheat cartridge.
Exactly. Like they just had like the knockoff versions of it, the Tesco brand walkthroughs. And I remember just being like, oh, I can beat Ruby Weapon. This is a piece of piss.
Right.
And then it's just like, oh, there goes one of my party members. Oh, that other person's nearly down to one HP. Oh, and I'm dead. And I was just like, well, how do I beat this? But instead of going out and learning and grinding and doing the stuff that the game basically forces you to do, I was like, no. I must be missing something. I'll try all my different party members. I'll equip them with different materia. I'll do all of this. And in the end, I was just like, oh, I can't beat this. So I had a long-standing grudge against Ruby Weapon because I was like, right, okay, fine. If you want to play it like this, I will come back and I will destroy you. I will humiliate you.
Right.
So what I did was I finally learned to go on the grind, and my God, did I grind. I did grinding harder than the arse chaps of the guy from Vanquish. I slid on that floor, ground it down to a nub, came back, and I obliterated it. I was like, you take that.
See, we'll get to this later on, because we have a question about sort of your like hot takes in gaming, and I love a little bit of grinding. I'm just saying, I like an RPG with a nice grinding kind of feel to it.
A nice bit of grinding, absolutely fine, if it's like encouraged and it's rewarded and you have your milestones set at different things. Like I can't think of a game, what the name of the game was, but they offered mid level rewards. So instead of you're like, oh, you've gone from level 16 to 17, here it was like, you're halfway there and you have unlocked this skill in the meantime. So it's like a sub level up sort of going on, or you have more points to spend. And I was like, I like games like that where they're constantly rewarding you to keep you in that gameplay loop. But you tell me that you enjoyed the grind from like level 96 to 97, like where it costs millions of experience.
I was going to say like, that whole, like, because I love, obviously, Final Fantasy VII, one of my favorite games. I've played through it a ton, but I've never actually done any of that super high level stuff. I've never beaten any of the weapons. I've only ever got Knights of the Round by doing the Exploder cheat card.
I went through the long haul, mate. I got the gold choke about everything.
I never did any of that stuff because I was always like, this is going to take hundreds of hours or whatever, and I just never bothered with that stuff. I'd like to like go back and do it all properly someday. But yeah, that really super high level stuff where every attack is like 9999 is just ridiculous. But anyway, next question from McAllister NYC, who says, hi fellas, first off, tried the cookie crisp in a glass of milk and can't believe this. Also, with the summer here, I wonder if you guys all do barbecue. And if so, what are some of your favorite things to grill? First off, I'm just saying, if you're joining the UBP and you don't know the majesty that is putting your cereal on top of a pint of milk, then go try it yourself. I'm sticking by it.
I mean, I still can't vouch for it at the moment because I haven't actually tried it since we talked about it. But still, I'm glad that some people out there are testing.
Well, you know, like Zoe, who used to work here, who did like the comic section and stuff, some of the things on Main, she sent me a picture of it was a glass of chocolate milk with a cookie crisp on the top. And she was like, you're onto something. I'm like, I know I'm onto something. It's about time you all started getting involved in the future.
I saw an Instagram video that made me think of you, which was somebody like crushed up an Oreo, poured chocolate milk into it, and then made a cake, like those microwave cake things. So it was like Oreo inside the cake in a cup.
That's an interesting
show. So it was chocolate fudge cake with Oreo at the bottom. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's fair enough. But that's like the hot version of your cold dessert that you're providing.
That could also go wrong. I'm not going to go into the many multifaceted reasons as to why you should have cookie crisp in a glass of milk, but I'm just going to say that it's pretty good. In terms of barbecue, I don't I think I know what McAllister means in terms of like a lot of American people like pride themselves on a good barbecue. You get the different bastings out, different sauces. It's like there's a real specificity to it, which I don't have. I don't think it's a UK thing, although some people still do have that. I personally don't. But what's your thoughts on the old barbecue?
Well, the reason I think that we don't have as much love for the BBQ as the Americans, Australians, whoever, is because of the fact that our weather is pretty much 75% overcast, cloudy and rainy. And if you live in Wales like I do, the per rain per area is the rainiest in the UK outside of some areas of Scotland. So yeah, I'm not getting out for much barbecues at the moment.
No, you're looking to get one of those disposable ones for like a quick afternoon. And then get the stuff on, cook it, get it out, get it eaten.
So any time to like marinade stuff is kind of out the window. When it's like, okay, lads, we have 30 seconds of sun, choose wisely. Like, what are you going to do with it?
Because I like the idea of that. I like the idea of like, because I've really got into coffee the last couple of years. So I'm just, I like the idea of like that. It's almost like vinyl. I feel like the mentality you need to have for vinyl, where it's like different needle types, different like different cables and all that kind of stuff. You can apply that to coffee. You can apply that to all these different things. Like there's a specificity to it, but I've never put the time in.
Do you know what's really funny? You've raised a great point here. When it comes to like, having interests or basically you choosing what to spend your disposable income on in the weirdest, most niche way possible. It's interesting when it comes to like vinyl, people who get into coffee, people who get into stuff, because I feel like hobbies have like a kind of J-curve effect where you've got interest levels go up and you get more and more invested into them. But at some point it crosses a margin where it becomes almost uncool, the obsession that you have with this one thing, and it's only cool to you and other people who are already have
that's like being a Sonic fan. You're still a Sonic fan.
So it's like with the coffee and stuff like that, we've got a friend down here called Rhys John Jones who has got the Welshest name possible, Rhys John Jones. He is into coffee and he's taken it to an extreme where you kind of look at him and you're like, does the cup need to be at room temperature? Do your beans need to come from halfway around the world? Do you need to have your sort of like milk, like espresso, or like have all these like formulas are going on? Mm-hmm. It's like, to me, a layman, read as idiot, it is just like, yeah, it's a nice cup of coffee, but I'm pretty sure that I could enjoy a cup of coffee without having to spend 40 minutes.
Oh, you could, but it's just, the thing is, at some point you're literally specifying like like accidental flavor notes. It's just, if I spend 10 more minutes brewing this, the thing is like you get into all the specific granule sizes. Like the other day.
I know, it goes mad, doesn't it?
It's pure mad scientist stuff. I had a bottle of actual beans, like raw beans that I hadn't ground yet. And I just poured all of them into my grinder and blew and did all of it. And then put all of that into a French press, which is way too much coffee.
Have like a massive like jitter down?
I had a heart attack. I sort of like put it all in and then I put all the water in and then it was like the berg of coffee granules at the top of the French press couldn't be punctured. It just sort of made a burger at the top of the French press. And then I give it like the 4 minutes and whatever I made that, but it was all bubbling. It was like like mad scientist thing. And then I drank that. And then I was like, well, this didn't actually taste too bad. But then my heart was just going crazy for the rest of the day. And I was like, I was Googling like, can you OD from coffee? I was just like, I'm actually going to kill myself in the pursuit of the best cup of coffee. But
it happened at Reese's, in fact, where he offered me an espresso. I had one. And then about 10, 15 minutes later, he was like, oh, do you want another one? And I was like, yeah, it was only a tiny, tiny shot of coffee. Had another one. And then I think I had like a double in a latte that he made because we were just over at his house just doing some like outdoor climbing. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, got in the car and I'm talking to Kerry and I'm just like, oh, I feel a bit weird. And she was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I'm getting really sweaty and I feel super on edge like now. And she's like, okay. And I was like, I need to go and lie down. Like I need to be alone in a quiet room for a few hours. I feel like physically detached from the world around
That was like, that was entirely of like my thing on my day off on Wednesday, which is like having this weird mutant coffee thing in the morning. And then, cause I've also
That's
got-
That's a great name for a coffee brand, by the way, mutant coffee. You mutant just make coffee. The strongest, weirdest blend.
It was like, it was full on, like I said, mad science over there bubbling in the corner while I was waiting for it to brew. I'm going to very quickly read off the amount of games that I played, and this might be because it was coffee fueled.
This is on
Wednesday. So I was up at 7:30 in the morning because I've got a really loud pigeon outside my window that wouldn't shut up. So I had to get up. I hate that pigeon. And so I went through Carmageddon, Tron Runner, Yaiba, Ninja Gaiden Z, Elekhead, Serious Sam 1 and 3, Cell Damage HD, Dark Void, Split Second, Ape Escape, Siphon Filter, TMNT, Shredder's Revenge, Ninja Gaiden 2, Metal Hellsinger, Shadow Warrior 3, and Sonic Origins. So I didn't finish
one day.
Yes, I didn't finish all those games, but I did about an hour or to like 45 minutes-ish of each one because I was like, I've got PlayStation Premium. I'm going to play as much stuff as possible with my weird ticky heart.
Do you know what blows my mind is that you have the ability to sit down and do that without being interrupted by anything around me. Like, because I got cats, because I got a girlfriend, because I got a house that is in constant need of repair, apparently, because I live in the money pit.
I love Carrie being put alongside the cats.
Oh, she is as distracting as the cat, 100%. But the thing is that I'm just there like, I have to do something on the hour every hour. I'm just kind of like, right, somebody needs feeding, whether it's Kerry or the cats.
No, my thing was, and like I said, I got up super early. My wife just went to work and I was just like, I could go back to bed and try and get some more sleep I could get up and try and play as much stuff as possible. So I rattled through all those things. But yeah, with a weird heart thing. And I, like you said, you feel like you're on edge. And I was just like, this is definitely the coffee doing this. But I'm just sort of in this weird like fugue state as I like fly, like
incredible,
try and play as much as possible.
Absolutely incredible. That you did that.
It was a thing. It was definitely a thing. Thank you. I'm glad I'm alive as well. It's worth saying that.
Yeah, me too.
The other half, actually, we didn't even answer NYC's question about favorite things to grill. I like a bit of halloumi. I'm a standard UK barbecue man. Give me burgers, give me sausages, give me koftas, potentially.
Give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Yeah, give me fire. And chuck all those things on as much as possible. The other half of his question was that IGN have recently published a top 10 best Zelda games list. And the comment section, he says, was quite spicy. He's wondering how we as content creators deal with that sort of stuff. Do we read the backlash? Do we ignore it? Do we laugh about it? Do we compare it over pints? Take care. Now, I don't know if you want to talk about the Zelda ranking. They've Breath of the Wild at number one. They got Link to the Past at number two. They've got Ocarina at three and Majora's at four. I can totally go with that for me. Not Majora's personally, but yeah.
See, the thing is I do rank Majora's higher because I do like my time mechanics. I do like the crazy creepiness of it. I actually personally, and remember, that is the big thing, it's a personal opinion. I had more fun with that over Majora's Mask, over Ocarina of Time.
Because I felt
like it was more condensed and a more sort of like straightforward experience in that sense. Breath
People
of the World,
love Majora's, yeah.
Yeah, Breath of the World does not surprise me that it's up at the top there because if you are being even, like, you have to be fair to that game. Mm-hmm. It took the open world formula, applied it to a game that not many people are expecting it to work with, and managed to elevate it in so many areas that you are looking at games emulating that going forward.
Oh, it changed the way open world stuff is done, which
so
I love.
So you can't argue with that. However, bit surprised that there's no love or not as much love for the 3DS Link Between Worlds. I still think that that is one of the most impeccable handheld games that I've played ever. And I would rank that up there alongside Link to the Past because I know that a lot of people are going to be like nostalgia fueled and put Link to the Past there. Mm-hmm. I just think that it takes what Link to the Past did and adds in more elements. So how
So they've got it at number seven, but yeah, I agree. That's one of my personal favorites.
Link to the Past seems like low actually. Can you read me out there? So we've got Breath of the Wild, then it was...
So if we go 1 through 10, you've got Breath of the Wild at number 1, Link to the Past number 2, Ocarina of Time number 3, Majora's is at 4, The Wind Waker at 5, Link's Awakening at 6, A Link Between Worlds at 7, The Original Zelda at 8, and then you've got a split of Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons at 9, and then Twilight Princess at number 10, which I would say big no.
That kind of smacks to me a little bit like they're just trying to pander to the nostalgic fans there by putting in, like, because let's face it, if you're talking about mechanically and you have to look at these games objectively from the year of 2022, the first original Legend of Zelda game is not as good or as an experience as the rest of them. Like, mechanically, it is fine, it is sound, it is an enjoyable game, but you look at what the other games have done. They've taken that formula and elevated it. I feel like it's just there to basically say, yes, you have to include the original. Otherwise people are going to get really annoyed.
But it's like the amount of stuff that it's set in motion. I still had quite a lot of fun playing through it a few years ago.
But I wonder these rankings. It's like, I feel like that almost needs to be set out at the outset. Are you ranking these games mechanically? Are you going like, which is the best game? Or are you talking about which of these games actually meant the most to the franchise? Because if it meant to the most to the franchise, then you're going to rejig that list entirely and put the original at number one. Because like you say, it's set everything in motion. So how can it not be number one?
That's true. I think it's always one of the, whenever we do it, it's always one of those like gut feeling mixed things where you sort of just go off like a mix of things, but you don't make it entirely subjective. Otherwise it would just be whatever your personal favorite is at number one. But in terms of how do we deal with it? Comment stuff. I used to read comments when I very first started doing stuff. stuff online, but you realize that there's very little to be gained from that. So it's sort of like, I used to have a 3-line rule on YouTube where I'll scroll down 3 lines as I move the page up, and I'll see what the top 3 comments are after, say, a couple of hours, because then some stuff has been like knocked up to the top and it's been upvoted a bit. There's a bit of a filtering system to that.
Yeah.
But I don't read comments. I don't really see the point of it. Like I don't, like I said, I don't mind checking some stuff, and obviously you want self-improvement or whatever. But I just, yeah, I'm not, it's not going to bum me out. It's not going to get to me.
Yeah.
I would say whatever I'm saying in person or whatever anyway. So I don't really care.
It's weird because sometimes I feel like if you put out an especially spicy list that you know is going to not aggravate people, but it's going to promote conversation through the lens of hyperbole and anger, over the top reactions and stuff like that, then yeah, you have to expect that there are going to be people of equal opposite thoughts that are going to come at you and tell you what they think, because you've basically started that conversation. But from the way that I've got, like, because obviously I do the choose your own adventure stuff. So every single week I scan the comments and look for the best suggestion and turn that into the list going forward. But because of that, the policing, self-governing comment section has been really nice, because I don't know if it's because they know that I'm looking at the comments or because of the fact that I'm going to choose the one that's the best. So everyone is putting forward nice ideas, but I very rarely see anything with people disagreeing and doing stuff like that. Even when there is somebody of a different take, it's usually framed in a way which is like, got to respect your opinion, mate, but this is what I feel
that's
on
good.
That. And I'm like, I think that that's the way to go forward, to cultivate great audiences, which we have on What Culture. You've got to show that you are part of that community and listen to what they're saying.
Yeah.
And I do feel like that is a great way for me personally to go through life and still be able to read comments and not get bummed out about them.
Oh yeah, same. I mean, I said like in general, I don't care. I mean, I'm referring to the negativity stuff. Like,
yeah, no, I'm not.
Yeah, people who are just trying to get a reaction or just trying to say the worst stuff. I mean, look, I mean, I've had death threats before. That was like years ago.
Yeah.
And people will reach you on Facebook and send something horrible or whatever. And it's like, dude, I mean, everyone knows this. It's just a game, whatever. Like, it's just one of those things where you're like, okay, this is just some online BS. I just have to crack on with something. Yeah. I think one of the only like lists that I've had that had like a divisive reception I wasn't expecting was when I did the best games of the generation of like the last sort of like 10 years, like the entire 8th generation. And just that just didn't go down that well. Like, it was just the picks that I had didn't seem to line up with the general consensus. And then some of the comments were just sort of like, I wouldn't have done that. Or what the hell are you doing putting Mortal Kombat 11 in there? That game sucked. And I'm like, you did. And whatever, we can have a long conversation about that if I ever see you in person.
And but, I feel like that's another limitation of our format, is the fact that you only get one to two minutes to talk about a game and explain why you think it's the best. But each of them deserves their own sort of like hour-long podcast explaining in great detail as to why it is.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's like, if you follow us properly, then you get like 3 podcasts a week, and you have the list, and you have like the news videos where something will come up, and that conversation is all year long. And so like every point that I want to make about Mortal Kombat 11 is spread across everything.
Yeah.
But like you said, you get a little snippet of it in the list. So yeah, I mean, to be able to do this day in, day out, you just can't factor everything in. But I think if it's constructive, I'll listen. I'll try and stick stuff on board. Otherwise, meh.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Do you know what I think really helps us is because of the fact that we have a very quick turnaround for our videos. Like, we're constantly moving from subject to subject. I feel like if I spent a month and only put out one video, which I know that a lot of YouTubers do, some don't even put them out every month. They put them out every couple of months. Mm-hmm. I feel like so much weight and importance is placed on that video is that you would read the comments. And if they have a negative reception, you will be crushed by them. Mm-hmm. Because whereas here, it's like, okay, maybe I did mess up on that one there and didn't get the right name, or I didn't get the right setting, or there was a mistake made somewhere. But we're moving forward. We're constantly learning and constantly adapting. Yeah. Whereas if I did that and it was out there and it took me 3 months to edit and get ready and I got that and people hated it, I'd be like, well, that sucks. That really sucks.
Yeah, I can massively back that. I think that, if my entire livelihood was riding on getting one video right, like, and obviously you put your entire life into that thing, and then, maybe your point is actually null and void because something comes out later that sort of invalidates it.
One of the people that I follow quite a lot is this H Bomber guy. I love the way that they do their like video essay style stuff, and I find that the video length is spiraling up to the 3 hour mark for the Deus Ex Human Revolution that they just put out. Mm-hmm. And I do think that is stemming from a fact that they are trying to get every thought that they had out concisely, and it doesn't work as an hour long video. It only works if you're allowed to talk about these games at great length and almost intercept any negative reactions that you might be experiencing. So you kind of are like addressing every single thing.
Oh yeah.
Make sure that your video is received how you wanted it to be received.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Noah Caldwell Gervais, Jordan Anderson, there's another dude, Tim Rogers, ex-Kotaku guy. Like, they do big, big, long sort of 5, 6, 10 hour videos.
Yeah.
Just getting like full everything they could possibly want to say about something. I love that kind of stuff to just sort of get immersed in. And that's the thing where, like you said, it's exhaustively like, here is everything I think about this game.
Yeah.
Whereas we have to kind of take that approach and then spread it across lists, podcasts, whatever else it is, editorials.
Also, just a quick shout out to Arlo as well. Breath of the Wild retrospective where he just did everything about that, and that video was so gargantuanly long, but I sat down and I watched every single minute of it. This is brilliant.
They've done so well. Ola did a video, I was like sitting at like a beach, like looking out to the ocean, just talking about the reality of doing YouTube stuff all day long and that being your entire livelihood. Yeah. And that was a really good video too. Yeah, massive shout out to Arlo. Next question from Richard Frutell, who says, for this question, I want you to imagine yourself in the role of parents. Do you raise your child with a strict gaming limit, like 10 hours per week or something like that? If yes, what do you consider accurate at what age, and when do you think you can resolve the limit? Now, I didn't have a gaming limit when I was a kid, so I don't know. I don't know about you. I was saying to Josh before I was recording, when I was putting these questions together, I don't remember this, but apparently when I was really, really young, I played something so much that my parents had to take it away from me. It was like my original Master System or something.
Amazing.
And I don't remember that at all. I've like blanked it from my memory, but it was like, I remember talking to my mum about this a while ago, and she was like, yeah, there was a time when we just couldn't get you off games, and Amazing. So we had to forcibly remove the Master System from me. Probably Sonic, to be honest. But that would be something like that. But I was never imposed a limit or anything, so I don't know about that.
I had a limit that was when we got the Snayers in the house. So I was only allowed to play it for like an hour a day, which I mean, is still more than enough, I think, for most kids. But if I was a parent, it's so hard. Like, you've got to be contextually adapting to what your kid is like.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a kid that has like ADHD, or it has like very excitable, very like things, then maybe video games can be used to focus energies and attention. However, you've got to counterbalance that with, what type of games are they playing? What are they interested in? Like, it may well be, like, I personally, the stereotypical teenager who just plays Call of Duty, has a foul mouth and a really rancid attitude towards life, I would hate that as a parent,
because
I would just be like, why are you not doing something better with your time in your youth? Because it's always through the lens of looking back even a decade or two and just being like, mate, if I was in your position, I would have done something a bit differently. Yeah. But I don't want to be the hard parent that is like going in there telling them off, because that pushes them further into the gaming sphere, because it's not being accepted in real life. Therefore, you're being pushed into a reality that you have control over.
You only go more towards escapism and the power, the agency that you can get there. I think I wouldn't put like a per week thing on it. I think it would, for me, it would almost be like a, like you said, it's day by day. It's like a gut feeling thing. I would need to know that my child was present in my life and was getting all the energies that I want to put into them, and make sure that that stuff is coming across respectfully both ways. And then it's like, okay, you know, it's Friday and you're a good kid, you're doing well in school, like, you know, the new game just came out, maybe I let you play that for like 3 hours or something, or whatever it is. I think I would roll with it sort of day by day, but it would be case by case.
My friend Jenko and his son, they actually do streaming together, and I think that is the sweetest thing, because it's like, I, as a kid, like, I'm not going to try and like pull the heartstring sort of things. Me and my dad, we played some video games together. We didn't play that much. It would usually be a case of like me watching him. Looking back at it, I would have killed for that sort of like interaction of doing a co-op game or just playing with him against that, because it's something that I was into. It was something he was into, but they'd never really, the Venn diagrams didn't ever always cross. If I had a kid and they were into gaming in any sort of thing, I would be making every possible effort to play games with them that and so that we could build that sort of core memories of, oh, I had a good time with video games and my dad.
Like, yo, definitely. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I didn't play that many games with my dad either, but a little bit of Metal Gear Solid, because I was like, Dad, come see this. It's like a weird, it looks like a Hollywood movie, right? And we'd sort of do that. And we'd play a lot of like Time Crisis and Point Blank, Point Blank, because they were just G-Con 45 light gun games, and they were just like the arcades, and he would like that stuff. But I think co-op stuff has come such a long way. Like, if you played through something like Brothers with your dad or whatever, or any parent really, you can build those sort of narratives, like those stories, and then you talk about it. If you went through all of like It Takes Two or something together, something like that, where it would be a good way to bring those things together. So I get the time limit thing, but I think mine would have to be case by case. And then, like you said, maybe your gaming time limit is something you do with them, and then you move on to do something else together.
Or alternatively, it could be that you get like a set amount of hours per week for solo gaming time. As if you want to use them, you can do that. If you don't, then we will play games together as much as we can, but it's up to you if you want to then go off and play them, but you have a cap on that.
Yeah. I think for me, it's going to be like, are you neglecting your other duties? Because I mean, when I was a kid, I was always like, well, I'm getting everything done. I'm doing well in school. My homework's done. Yeah. Like, I would always leave homework till the last minute, but whatever. Like, it got done. It was done. And so I was always like, you know, I'm putting the time in. Like, why can't I have my own time to then go play stuff? And like, yeah, that was, I think it's all like always about like a balance. And like I said, like respect goes both ways kind of thing. Next question from that guy, Jim, who says, what is a spicy take you have that will get the internet sharpening their pitchforks? Ooh. My current one is that Last of Us Part One is not a remake. It's just a PS5 remaster. I don't think that's that spicy, to be honest. That's just like a visual overhaul.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of visual overhauls, we were talking about that 13 graphical update. Mate, I am fuming again. I thought that I'd gotten over it. I thought I'd gotten over it with Bennett Foddy, but now I am right back in this celestial body.
Stuck in the pot of hate.
Oh man, I'm so fuming.
The thing is that like, they're remastering it, but it just looks like you applied like a Snapchat cel-shaded filter to a standard render. Like, it doesn't look like it's built to be cel-shaded.
It is too little too late as well. It's like, like, we are done with this. You blew it. You decided to go this completely opposite way. We hated it. And now you're coming back and be like, oh, we'll make it better. We'll do this. It's like, you don't even put the flipping effort, and you make the game run at like less than 30 frames a second. And I'm just like, what is going on? I will go and get the original game. I will plonk it in front of you and just say, make this, or better yet, don't make
it. I'll just get it on Steam Deck, and then I can play how it originally was supposed to feel.
I tell you what, you get it on Steam Deck, play it side by side, and we will basically compare. We'll compare notes on that.
Yeah, that's a show. This is the question that I referenced earlier on, where I think for me, I can't think of too spicy. I'll tell you what my spiciest take is, and I'm still rumbling on this.
Here we go.
I haven't formed this into a full cogent argument yet, and it might become a video, but I'll just say this and we'll pick it apart. Okay. I think that PlayStation Premium, the new service, kind of poops on Game Pass. I didn't used to think this.
Okay, but much like a video game essay, expand.
Well, I just think, like, you think about what you're getting, you think about the value of what's in there, you think about the PlayStation exclusive library versus the Xbox exclusive library, and how little there is on the Xbox side. And I'm not saying that Game Pass isn't one of the best valued deals in gaming. It is, but we're comparing, you know, like 6 to 8 games every month that are very well picked and very well curated, the likes of Shadowrun and that have just dropped, or things like Paradise Killer that I love from this year. But I almost would say, and this is why it's a spicy take, that you can't, that entire archive of content doesn't really compare to The Last of Us 2, God of War, Ghost of Tsushima, that are now included as part of that bundle. There's nothing that Xbox has put out since give me the last 10 years that is even remotely close to a PlayStation exclusive. And it's not that I don't love Xbox. I grew up with it. I have a Series X. I put the time in and the money in. But I just, when you really compare those two, what are you buying kind of thing, I think the PlayStation archive is worth way more than the Xbox archive.
Now, I think that I would slightly disagree based on... So you're saying that the handful of first-party Sony exclusives are the sole reason why it's trouncing the Game Pass.
Yes, now, I think if you're paying for a monthly thing and you hold them both up, the PlayStation one is worth more.
So let's go down a little trip, metaphorically, to CEX or any other sort of secondhand retailer, and we're going to go and pick up every single first-party exclusive for Sony, and we're going to take them to the till. God of War is like 10 quid. For Horizon Zero Dawn is like a tenner. Maximum 20 quid one of these things. You could get every single Sony first-party title, I would argue, for about 100 quid, 150 maybe.
The newer one's a bit more, but
decent one. So you're saying that like that £150 that you get for tangibly owning those games is worth more than the Xbox's constant curation of new games that have been grabbed from other developers there.
Your
value then is being placed on those first party games. But if you basically went and bought from both sides their first party titles and just looked at what else they're offering, the Game Pass to me offers more value in terms of playing games I would never play.
Yeah, you make a very... Well, the thing is, there are a lot of them on the PlayStation side too. They're in the past though. Like that, you make a very good point about past versus future, because I agree with you. The value of the future of gaming is more on the Game Pass side, because we don't know how PlayStation are going to curate stuff. And so there's more of an inbuilt assumption that Xbox will curate a set of indie games or a set of mid-tier budget games and make sure they're in front of you every month. I agree with that, absolutely. I'm just saying, as they exist right now, if you had money per month and you want a bunch of stuff to play, it's the PlayStation Premium thing. That's why I said I'm kind of like I'm still working this stuff out.
I think I agree with you on that one. Like right now, as it stands, like the value town is over on the PS side, because
like
of
all the PlayStation
experiences you get.
Yeah, in one place for one monthly fee is insane, and it's the mid tier as well. You don't even have to get premium; you can just get PlayStation Extra. I don't have the top off the top of my head. I know that PlayStation Premium is 100 a year, but that's the top tier one. That's what comes with PS1, PS2, and PS3 games. Mm. But you could just do PlayStation Plus Extra, which is the mid tier, and get the library of about 700 games or whatever, 500 games.
Yeah, it
has
very
all
impressive.
PS4 and PS5 games in, from Returnal to Last of Us 2 and everything else. So, and that all comes with streaming and everything. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. I think the way that they've approached it is like they're almost opposites. Like PlayStation prioritized exclusives for years and then did their monthly service that includes them, and Xbox prioritized the monthly service, and now they're trying to make exclusives that they can then release on the monthly service. So they're kind of just coming at it from the opposite end.
Which is kind of nice in a way, because as gamers, if you have the disposable income to afford both, then you really do have a wealth of content that is, well, it's overwhelming.
It's ludicrous. So,
yeah.
But it's basically like if you've missed out on a bunch of stuff, or if there's any PlayStation exclusives or anything you haven't played, premium is absolutely worth your money. But like Jules said, if you want to invest in the future of gaming, until we know how Sony are going to handle it, then Game Pass is worth it down that regard. But as archives of content, I think premium poops on Game Pass right now. But that's a whole thing in regards to how many exclusives the Xbox side of things.
Indeed.
Having put together, what was your spicy take, my friend?
My spicy take will be that BioShock 2 is better than BioShock Infinite. Hands down.
You made me wheeze.
Like, seriously, man. Like, I went back and played BioShock Infinite recently, and I was just there like, I love the setting. I love the characters. I just think that this story just dives straight up its own backside.
I agree
halfway
with you, to be honest. That was
I'm
never
just
a
like,
big Infinite
and
fun.
I bloody well hate fighting the handymen. They make no sense in terms of the storyline. They make, like... They just feel like they were designed to be, they were like, oh, we've got to have like a big daddy enemy. How are we going to make this? And it's like, I see the parallels and I understand that these are parallel universes. So therefore everything kind of has to be the same, but I hate little elements of it so much. Like I genuinely detest that they wrote it in that, one of the creators in BioShock Infinite is looking through, no, sorry, Sushong is looking through tears at other people's works and stealing them for his own big daddy designs. I was like, why are you making a character who was so detested because of how evil his intellect made him into a goon? You are making, you are lessening his legacy, admittedly a terrible legacy, but made him such an important figure of Rapture by basically just saying, nah, he cribbed his stuff from somebody else.
That was, Infinite, I thought was just a weird hodge hodgepodge of like design elements. Like all the Skyhook stuff was fun, but they didn't do anything with it.
Like, don't get me wrong. I do not hate that game. It still ranks as being an above competent shooter. I love like the elements and I love the graphics. I love the design. And a lot of the story is very emotive, fantastic. But there are just a few elements here and there that stop Infinite from being the game that I really wished it was. Whereas BioShock 2, because you're returning to the familiar, because you're expanding on this and it's even more decayed, it's even more horrible, it feels like you're slipping on a pair of familiar but very wet galoshes and you are uncomfortable but you know where you are. And Sophia Lamb's sort of like constant drone of having like turned the remaining people of Rapture into a cult, it hits with more energy than the exact same story of Comstock basically creating a cult himself. So you basically look at those two games, they kind of follow similar paths in a way. But I just prefer being a big daddy. I prefer the DLC expansion for Minerva's Den.
I was going to say Minerva's Den,
is impeccable in my opinion. And the fact that it came with a multiplayer game that no one asked for, admittedly, but was still surprisingly decent. I was like, you know what? Good on you, BioShock 2.
You should 1,000,000% make this into a video. I feel like there'll be a lot of people just going, finally, someone said the thing. Because BioShock 2 never gets its day in the sun. It's the one that Ken Levine didn't work on. But I feel like, it's like there's always been this sort of residual thing of like, but there is good stuff here, especially Minerva's Den is always held up as a really good DLC. So maybe someday we'll turn it into a maybe someday. We will end on a final question from Zach, who says, who's the best doggo in gaming? Now I will also that Zach supplied a photo of his dog called Maverick, which also possibly the best dog I've ever seen. Now go back on our the tweet that we put out from Thursday and just scroll down, look at Zach's dog, what a lovely dog. What's your gut say, best doggo in gaming?
Best dog in gaming, it's either going to be main character from Akami, because obviously you play
Amaterasu.
Amaterasu, that's it. But if I'm being honest and I have to choose the best dog, it's either going to be the Chihuahua from the Chihuahua races that you get in God Hand, because I love that game and I will always take a thing to talk about it, or the wolf that you save from in the opening sections of Resident Evil 4, and it better bloody well come back, because if you do choose to save it, it comes and helps you out with an El Gigante boss battle. And I've been told that this is actually a sly reference to another Capcom property called Haunting Grounds, and that dog is called Huey, I want to say his name remember, but that dog is Huey from that game. And I was like,
That's okay. So my that's really, really cool. My gut goes to the dog in Fable 2.
Amazing.
Because I was just love the way that thing was coded. I love back when Peter Molyneux was, he wasn't cool, but back when Peter Molyneux was not what he is now.
He's not an NFT real estate developer.
Yeah, exactly. Like it was back then, it was like, we coded this dog, there's no button to control it, but if it's just, it intuits what you want to do all the time. And I love the way that you can kind of just be the same way that you would with a real animal. You just sort of crack on with your life and you train it a little bit and you can emote with it and it'll learn stuff. I thought that was one of the best dogs in gaming as a literal dog AI. Like it feels like a dog.
Yeah.
Also massive shout out to, I think it's called Trico or Trico in The Last Guardian. Thing is like a weird cat, dog, fish, bird thing.
Very odd creature.
The dogness in that, I think, makes it feel nice and loyal, and it can be, I'm still saying that's an honorary dog. I think that thing's close. My mind went to the horse from Shadow of the Colossus. I know it's not a dog, but I just think in terms of companion AI, I was like, you can treat it like a dog, even though it's a horse.
Obviously, dog meat from the Fallout games as well. Absolute staple. I love the fact that it just keeps coming back up. Every single game, you get a new version of.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Me and Tim, Super Tim. Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Dog meat, and I'm just like, yes.
To be fair, it's rare that a dog drops the ball. Like there's not really a worse dog in gaming. Like, they're one of the most reliable companions ever, really. Like, in life and in gaming.
I'm trying to think of like a terrible... Oh, actually, no. What was the one that you got from Grand Theft Auto 5? That was just a pain.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I forget what you call that thing.
You just constantly had to be like, oh, let's go take him for a
walk. It's called Chop, I think.
Yeah, you're just kind of like, okay, right.
Cool. I'll round this out.
Literally does nothing.
True. I will round this out with the one from Dead to Rights, Shadow. You can get to go nosh on some bollocks and bring you a gun, and it'll bring you ammo and firearms and everything.
We should do a list. I feel like there's a list there. I don't know if it'll track well with the audience, but we should definitely try.
It feels like it's one of those things that's most obvious. We should do 10 most obvious lists you guys won't watch, and we can put the dog list in that one, because we have these thoughts all the time. Yeah. But anyway, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their questions. This has been the Untitled Banner Podcast, the UBP. I've been Scott Hilford. You've been Jules Gill.
I have indeed. And where are my mugs?
Where are the mugs? Where are the mugs these days, mate? We're right here. But Jules is over on Twitter at RetroJ. I was going to say.
With a zero, my friend.
RetroJ with a zero. I'm at /LP89. Massive thank you again, and we'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.